Well, our story today about Jesus is one of the most dynamic, maybe reveals some facets to Jesus' personality that we might not be as familiar with. And, you know, interestingly, not too long ago, I came across an image on social media depicting this story. But it was an image that was generated by AI when someone asked for AI to create an image of Jesus flipping over the tables in the temple. And this is what it created for them. Oh, Richard, you can't see it. I'll show you later. Parkour Jesus. The subtle but important distinction between flipping over the tables and flipping the tables over. So, can't end a sentence with a preposition, right? So this is a very dynamic story as pictured by Jesus. Jesus is literally jumping over the table, Richard, in the picture. But it's also maybe an unsettling one because our ideas of Jesus may be that he sort of maintained a sense of calm and composure at all times. And we might wonder, given that he was fully God and fully human, what does this tell us about anger and the way in which anger in and of itself is not a sin? We're told in the New Testament, in your anger, do not sin. So the Bible is clear that there's a distinction between the two. But we might be more familiar with depictions of Jesus like one in a miniseries, a very famous miniseries about the life of Jesus from the 1970s. And it's a very wonderful miniseries, Jesus of Nazareth. But one thing kept bothering me. I'm just like 8 hours long, so kept bothering me over and over again. Jesus seems to always be staring off into the distance, like he's internally kind of tuned in to God the Father's radio channel, listening to what he's supposed to say, and has this almost sort of, at times, a sort of disconnect from the things that are going on around him, this sort of neutrality. And so this story reminds us that Jesus truly engaged with the world around him, and that he saw things that made him angry at times. It's clear from the Gospels that being fully God does not squash Jesus' human emotions. We've seen him moved by other people's suffering, sorrowful to the point of tears when his friend Lazarus dies, rejoicing when his disciples are excited about the work he sent them out to do, and here we see him angry. Some of us might really love that Jesus had the capacity for anger. Others might feel uncomfortable. Over the years, as I've learned about anger as an emotion and how to handle it, one of the writers that I have learned the most from is a counselor who lives here in Nashville, Chip Dodd. You may have heard of him. He has a book called The Voices of the Heart, and he also started the Sage Hill Counseling Centers that are here in our area. And in this book, Chip identifies each of the core human emotions and their positive function, what he calls their gift. Each of those core emotions can also become impaired or dysfunctional, but that doesn't mean the emotion itself is actually a bad thing. So Chip is going to sort of be our guide throughout our time together today looking at this passage. So anger, what is its gift? Chip tells us, the gift of anger is passion. Authentic anger is a caring feeling that tells us something matters. Anger tells us that something important is being threatened, and it moves us to seek justice and to right that wrong. Chip goes on to say, anger exposes what we value and expresses our willingness to do whatever is required to reach that value. So authentic God-given anger defends the good and fights against the bad. And it's important to note, before we look any further at this story, that Jesus did not express his anger physically in any form of violence towards other people. He did flip the tables over, but he did not physically hurt anyone in his anger. So as we look at this story and consider what Chip has to say about anger, let's ask ourselves three questions. What is happening in this story that's making Jesus mad? Why does it make him mad? And what does it tell us about who Jesus is? So first of all, what is happening in this story? Well, Jesus is in the temple in Jerusalem. What we need to know about the temple in terms of background is that it had a completely unique role in the life of the people of Israel. There was only one temple. There were a lot of local synagogues sprinkled around the countryside in each of the little villages. We hear stories about Jesus attending synagogue in Nazareth, in Capernaum. But the temple is on another level. It is the place where God's presence dwells in a special way among God's people. N.T. Wright, the New Testament scholar, talks about how the Bible, the cosmology of the Bible, describes heaven and earth like interlocking spheres. And the temple is the place where they overlapped at that point in time. So the temple was a lot more than just a beautiful building where people thought about God. It was where the people of God got close to God's very presence. As we see in the Old Testament, through the cloud by day and the fiery pillar by night. The temple was truly God's house, as Jesus calls it in this passage. And people were using the temple as a place of trade and a place of commerce. They were setting up their businesses to sell their wares inside the temple courts. Now, there were actually very legitimate reasons for having this trade. The location is more of the problem. But there's two things going on. One is exchanging money, and the other is selling animals. People came to the temple in part to pay a temple tax. And there was a problem with the currency of the day. The Roman coins, if you've ever taken Latin or studied the Roman Empire, you'll know that their coins, just like our coins today, had the head of their emperor on them. And we heard today the second commandment, "You shall make no graven images." So the temple officials did not accept the Roman currency as a form of paying the temple tax. So people had to trade in their everyday coins to a temple shekel in order to pay this tax. And second, there was also a pretty good reason for selling animals in proximity to the temple. Since there's only one temple in the whole land, people would be traveling there from all over Israel. And they wouldn't want to have to transport animals for sacrifice all the way from, say, Galilee. So these livestock merchants are providing an important service to keep the sacrificial system going. But it seems that the trade was now happening openly inside the temple courts instead of being conducted outside. So imagine if communion were BYOE, bring your own elements, and maybe you were in a rush and you forgot to bring your wine or your wafers that morning. Well, in this kind of instance, you'd be in luck because there'd be people set up right out there to sell you ruby red port or premium 100% whole wheat wafers. That's the sort of setup that we're talking about. But they were selling animals, so this is also very noisy. So that is what's going on in this story. Why is this making Jesus upset? We've covered sort of the legitimate reasons for this occurring. But Jesus tells us himself, he says he's upset because the temple is a house of prayer, not a house of trade. The temple is a place to encounter that special presence of God, a place to worship him, to give thanks, to ask for forgiveness of sin. And the temple tax and the sacrifices are supposed to be means to that end. But the business side of setting these things up was distracting from those ultimate ends. It was drawing people's focus away. And Jesus, in this sense, in this story, continues the heritage of the Old Testament prophets. He is calling God's people to remember that what God ultimately wants is not their coin and not their animal, but he wants them to return to him with their whole heart, to stop paying lip service to rote religion and get their priorities straight. So that is why Jesus is angry. But there is a second layer to Jesus' anger. It's not a self-righteous, uptight sort of impulse of wanting everyone to do things his way. Perhaps you've heard about When people, therapists talk about anger, they often talk about it being like the tip of an iceberg. It's actually a secondary emotion that is being triggered by another emotion. So the iceberg analogy is that the anger is what we can see above the surface of the water, but there's another emotion that is under the surface. Sometimes it could be fear or disappointment or insecurity, or in the words of Chip, our anger can be caused by caring about something. Chip says that anger is the ultimate expression of love. So we see here that Jesus is angry because of what he values. He values loving God and God's people being reconciled to God. And the disciples even use the word zeal for this passion that is moving Jesus to a place of anger, but it stems from his love. So what does this tell us about who Jesus is? Well, the second half of our passage, where Jesus is talking with the Jewish leaders about tearing down the temple and building it back up, gives us an answer. Jesus is announcing that his body is now the intersection of heaven and earth, that concentrated presence of God among his people. The role of the temple has been to be a signpost pointing towards him, but now that he is here, it's being surpassed. And that is why Jesus makes this audacious claim that he can tear the temple down in 3 days and build it back up, because he is actually speaking about his death and his resurrection. Chip says that anger expresses our willingness to do what is required to reach our values. In this prediction that Jesus makes of his death, we see the lengths to which Jesus is willing to go. Do you remember what the gift of anger was? Passion. And that's a word that has a special meaning for us at this time of year. It encompasses, the passion of Christ encompasses all the ways in which Jesus showed us his willingness to suffer for us, from his humiliation to his punishment to his death. So as we draw closer to Holy Week and observe the passion of Jesus, I want to share one last thing from Chip Dodd. He says that part of love is a willingness to suffer for something that matters more than pain. So today we are thankful for the love of Christ that was willing to suffer for us, the greatest love of all, which is to lay down one's life for his friends. Amen.